Hi, I'm Frances Anderton and this is DNA. Joan Barton is one of the few women contractors in Los Angeles.
I was sitting at a stoplight, Washington and Lincoln, and a friend of mine who's a contractor pulled up next to me who I hadn't seen in 10 years. And he said, "Hey, what are you doing?" And I said, "I'm not doing much. What are you doing?" And he said, "Well, I'm going to Boston. I'm going on a retreat." And then he turned to me and he said, "Do you know how to build a house, right?"
Listen up for her thoughts on building and on empowerment in a man's world. First up, though, if you head to the Arts District this weekend, you just might encounter a bright bulbous red object on wheels.
It's called gita, which in Italian means short trip, usually with your family and friends. And it carries 44 pounds of your stuff and follows a person using autonomy.
Gita is a kind of robotic suitcase. It rolls along behind you. It's made by Piaggio Fast Forward. Now, Piaggio is the Italian company that dates back to 1884 and invented the Vespa scooter. Piaggio Fast Forward was founded to focus on fresh ideas for lightweight mobility. The company's chief creative officer is Greg Lynn.
We're a company that's thinking about cities and autonomy, but not from an automotive perspective. From a perspective of humans and pedestrians and riders.
You can test Gita and other devices at a mobility festival coming up this weekend called LA Co-Motion. It's intended to get people excited about the streetscape of the future and about different ways of getting around while we're in the midst of great change in transportation. Ashley Zeehand is a transportation technology strategist and she's a senior advisor to LA Co-Motion. Here's what she said at a recent conference.
And so I think there's a lot of beauty in the opportunity we have right now to set a vision for the future that we want. Because if we don't, the technology will happen to us. That there's a real possibility it could go horribly wrong if we don't think about designing towards that future that we want.
So does the future we want include Gita? I met with Greg Lynn at his LA studio in the Crenshaw District, and there on the floor was a jolly red round container about 2 feet wide and about 2 feet across with two black rubber tires and a lid on top. So let me see, I'll put my stuff in there. Here's a couple of my bags. In it goes, two purses have fit into this. Okay, Greg is going to shut the lid. And then what do we do next?
So now it's really just as simple as one touch. It follows legs. It's obsessed with legs. So if you stand right where you are, I'll just touch it one time. And now it's paired to you. So now if you just start walking, it'll follow you.
Okay, off I go. Here we go. Gita is turning around. And let's see, I'm heading out of Greg's office, and Gita is following. Is following, and it is terribly funny. Okay, Greg, as Gita follows me, will you explain how it's working?
Right, so it is working purely visually, very much like what's on an autonomous car right now. You call it SLAM, which means simultaneous localization. It's following your legs, and it actually, if I cut in front of you, it'll know the difference between your legs and my legs. We train it the same way you train now a computer with learning. So we show it lots and lots of pictures of people's legs, and it learns what they look like, and it sees them and follows them. And because of that, it can go inside and outside. It doesn't use GPS. It doesn't use a signal to find you. It actually does it all visually, and it builds maps of environments while it's doing it.
As you were just explaining that, Greg, Gita started moving away. Why did it do that?
Well, again, we're training the behavior, so it's close enough that you don't feel like you've lost it, but not so close that it's crowding you.
Okay, so I was able to put two purses in the container in the middle between the tires, which isn't a huge amount of luggage.
Yep.
And those purses I could have carried myself.
Yep.
Why would I use this instead?
Well, it'll carry two full-size grocery bags. So a couple gallons of milk is probably the limit between you walking to the store and driving. And if you wanted to walk 3-4 miles, this might be the difference between you carrying those two bags 3 miles and getting in your car.
Would it be the difference between me doing that trip with Jita or with using one of those wheelie bags where you have a suitcase on wheels, which is what most people would use these days?
Sure. I think most people don't commute with a suitcase on wheels, though, because it's, A, you're pulling it, but B, it doesn't do so well over, like, improved surfaces like sidewalks and things.
Jita is kind of adorable looking. It even seems to have a kind of nose built into it, which it gives it a vaguely anthropomorphic quality. It's kind of a cheerful looking object, but it also is kind of quite funny, you know, and funny in the way that perhaps people standing on a Segway was slightly funny. Slightly funny.
Oh, that's our worst case.
No, it's far more delightful looking than a Segway, but still does look a little sort of weird, you know. Do you anticipate a lot of people feeling okay about having this contraption kind of following them?
Well, I have two responses. One is Segway is a brilliant piece of technology, but it's a bad idea getting people to walk less. If you even ask a postal delivery person, which is who they were meant for, what's the number one thing you love about your job? They'll tell you walking. And so to make a device that keeps you from walking just makes you look a little nerdy. And we have found that women like Jita, and women don't tend to be into robots. And we struggle to make sure that this isn't a thing for engineers. It's not about a person and their robot and being a robot companion. It doesn't talk to you. It doesn't replace human interaction. Ideally, you should go for a walk and forget that it's even behind you. We'd want it to be a robot that is just useful. Like, we think of it like a mechanical mule, like a little helper that follows you around.
Oh, my little helper has come right up and touched my leg.
Yeah, I turned it off.
Oh. It's naughty groping, Jita. We go out onto the street with Jita still following me. And at this point, you might have some questions like, if someone crosses between Jita and I, does it follow the new person? No, unless you follow the person step by step and try to trick it. How about, can it follow someone in a wheelchair? Yes. How's it powered? By a rechargeable battery that gets 8 hours to a charge. What happens if it stalls and I have to get it home? Well, you can push it. It's harder to pick up, though, since it weighs 60 pounds. Can it go on mass transit? No. Does it go up steep hills? It can go up and down ADA-compliant ramps, but it'll still struggle with some slopes in San Francisco. And can it double as a baby stroller? Sasha Hoffman is COO of Piaggio Fast Forward, and I asked her.
It's actually the number one most requested thing is that people want to know if they can put their baby or their child in it. The second most requested thing is beer. So they want to take it to the beach and they want it to be their portable beer bucket.
And they can put the beer in it. They can't put the baby in it right now. Could they put ice in it for the beer?
So we are working on something that is more weather resistant. But if you had a cooler, you could drop it inside or even just ice packs. You can put your beer on top of that.
But could Jita then go over the sand, or would sand defeat Jita?
So Jita currently doesn't go in sand or mud. Those are basically the two, but it goes on most other surfaces. I mean, I've taken it on carpet, grass, dirt, cement, inside tiles, pretty much everywhere else.
There is a bigger question, though, which is, do we really need Jita? And after all, would the energy going into developing this perhaps be better applied to figuring out, say, what to do with all the people who'll lose their jobs to self-driving cars and trucks? Or how about figuring out how to make mass transit more appealing than a private car? Just as I'm pondering all this, up come two teenage boys, Jeremy and Atlas. They live up the street from Greglin's studio and they stop and stare and smile at goofy Jita. Greg shows them how to use it, and off goes Jeremy with Jita rolling obediently behind. So what's his reaction?
I think it's tight. I like it. I use it at school or something.
To carry your bags?
Yeah.
You can put stuff in it.
Oh, yeah. You can put stuff. I'll put my helmet in it.
Oh, my gosh. Oh. That is sick, bro.
Yeah, I'll put stuff in there, and I'll just carry it.
That is hard, bro. I'm sorry. That's tight.
Do you use the Atlas?
Yes, most definitely. I use that for school.
What color would you most like?
Light blue, sky blue, yeah, that one.
Lime green.
What do you like about it?
The way it, like, maneuver and, like, it follows you so nobody could, like, use it while you're using it. Like,
yeah,
you know.
I feel you can't like, take it, yeah. Like, while you're using it. Yeah. I feel you. Are you guys going to start selling them?
It's going to take us about a year and a half. We want to do it, like, not just a few for people with a lot of money. We want to make them affordable enough. We can sell thousands, hundreds of thousands.
Later, are y'all going to add, like, more stuff to it or y'all going to just leave it?
What would you want on it?
I don't know.
Like a cup holder.
Or umbrella, like that stick up while you are.
Yeah.
Well, Atlas and Jeremy are sold on the pilot, but could they buy Jeeta? Right now, the launch date and price have not been set, but Greg Lynn is sure there's a market for people wanting to use tech in a way that enhances a traditional urban experience, walking.
I mean, we don't want to have a world like WALL-E, you know, where everybody's fat and lethargic and everything just comes to them the minute they think about it. You know, we would much rather have a city that's smart and intelligent with autonomy like this, but that really puts people and their experience and lifestyle in the center of it.
Tech companies in Silicon Valley are really getting into the whole smart city thinking and making. Are you getting interest from Silicon Valley in this?
Well, so we're based in Boston, even though I live in Los Angeles. One of the nice things about being based in Boston is there's a lot of roboticists there. That's why we started there. But the culture there is not about solving small problems. And what you're suggesting is when Silicon Valley tries to solve big problems, which is really admirable. A lot of what Silicon Valley does is try to solve small problems, what they call pain points. Like, what? How do I solve the pain point of getting the burrito from the drone through your window? So we're not in the business of solving small problems and pain points. We're really trying to make a whole mobility ecosystem for the city.
That was Greg Lynn, creative director at Piaggio Fast Forward. I'm Frances Anderton, and this is DNA. Now you can meet Jeeta this weekend at the LA Co-Motion Mobility Festival taking place in the Arts District. Find all the details on our website. Coming up after this break, Joan Barton has a lot to say about the joy of building, as well as being a dirty girl in the male world of construction. Back with DNA, I'm Frances Anderton. If you've ever tried to build a house in Los Angeles, you will know there can be lots of obstacles. Getting permits, unanticipated costs, and struggles between builders, designers, and the client. But building sounds like smooth sailing when you talk to Joan Barton. Joan is a contractor. She runs her own company. It's called Dirty Girl Construction.
I was always filthy, and I thought, I can't call it filthy girl. I mean, that's really, that's porn. So
dirty girl is soft porn.
Yes, it's soft porn, dirty girl. But really, when I was working out in the field all the time, my nails, I couldn't keep them clean. And I thought, dirty girl, I wonder if I can make that fly.
She's kept a low profile till now, partly because she tends to work for fairly high profile clients who usually prefer to keep their homes out of the limelight. But this month, she was profiled in the Shelter magazine Metropolitan Home. And now she's getting more vocal about building in LA and about blazing a path in a man's field, especially in this moment of intense awareness of sexuality in the workplace. I went to meet her in her firm's new offices in Inglewood, and we sat at a makeshift table and dove into all those topics.
Well, we're building a lot of really incredible homes all over, you know, the LA basin. We have one going up in the Palisades right now, 5,000 square feet, three-story hillside. We do a lot of hillside building. Actually, the most complicated steel package we've ever put together and put in the ground. It's been mind-boggling math and a lot of 3D modeling to really make sure, because you can't like cut the steel down once it's there. We do Craftsman, Spanish, a lot of mid-century modern, but super high craftsmanship, amazing architectural details, and houses I would love to live in, which is always nice.
So Joan, tell us the backstory. How did you get to this place?
Well, I always like to just sort of joke and say this all happened by accident, but I think it was divine intervention. My background is music and art, I went to Berklee School of Music in Boston and studied film composition and songwriting. And before that, I was in art school. I was at Parsons. I went to Boston Museum of Fine Arts.
But your music brought you to LA. Mm-hmm. You had a career in music, correct? And then you made this transition.
Yeah, I was writing music for mainly commercials, television commercials, and playing on records. I have a handful of people I had worked with as a piano player. And then the music business died, or was dying, I should say. So in 92, I was sitting at a stoplight, Washington and Lincoln, and a friend of mine who's a contractor pulled up next to me, who I hadn't seen in 10 years. And he said, "Hey, what are you doing?" And I said, "I'm not doing much. What are you doing?" And he said, "Well, I'm going to Boston. I'm going on a retreat." And he turned to me and said, "Do you know how to build a house, right?" And me being me, a yes person, I said, "Yeah," which was really not true. And then he said, "Oh, awesome. Can you cover my project while I'm gone?" And again, I said, "Yes." This is all at this stoplight. And I'm thinking in my head, what am I doing? But this is just me being me. I just love the challenge and I love the puzzle. And I wasn't busy that day. So we went over to his project and he showed me what had to be done. And I figured I could handle it. So I did a lot of research. I did a lot of reading. There was no Google like there is now. I mean, we had computers, but somebody would ask me a question and say, "What do you think about this detail versus this detail?" And I'd say, "Let me get back to you." I'd write down all the words they were saying that I didn't know, and I would look it up and figure it out, and I'd come back the next day with my answer.
But still, there must have been something that you'd done that made him think you could do this.
I don't know why he thought that. Maybe it's my design background, but it made perfect sense for me to go do this project. And then he came back and he was so happy with what I did. He asked me to join his company. So I ran his business with him for about a year and a half. And I learned the backside of the business, you know, behind the scenes, the books and the bidding and material costs and all these different things. And then I got out in the field for 4 or 5 years and learned all the trades. But it just suited my brain. It was just a different tool belt. You know, it went from going, okay, I'm going to take all these different instruments and create an orchestra. And now I'm going to take all these different building elements and create a building. To me, it's the exact same thing. It's just a slightly different language, but there's a lot of math, there's a lot of art, and both of those things please me, you know? And anytime I get to put a puzzle together, I mean, even when I'm relaxing at home, you know what I do? I do jigsaw puzzles, I do crossword puzzles, I put things together because my brain never stops. Even if I try, my brain's always calculating how to problem solve and put things into place.
Where there's a difference is one is an experience through the ears and the other's an experience through the eyes. Do you ever miss music?
Oh, yeah, I miss music. I have two pianos at home. You know, there are times when I still need to connect to my own spirit in a way that only happens through music.
You've talked about piecing it together, a building like a puzzle, and a puzzle that you resolve, you know, like a jigsaw that you resolve. But the reality of getting stuff built, it's not always as smooth as a jigsaw puzzle. Tell us about that side of it.
Well, yeah. I mean, trying to get a project out of the ground these days, it's a combination of reality TV.
Meaning?
People's expectations of what it takes to really build and how much it costs.
They think you can do a makeover of their house in a weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. They think I can actually build a 5,000 square foot house in 2 weeks, you know, for like a dollar. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. The other side of it is dealing with the city, which is proving to be more and more difficult.
Joan Barton is referring here to the permitting process in the city of LA. She says there have been a lot of code changes limiting mansionization and allowing granny flats. Add to that a construction boom and an advent of new staff still learning the code. And Barton says there are huge delays in getting projects built.
If you make it too difficult for people to build, they will not build. You will not be able to increase the taxes on their properties, period. And they will build without your permission, and you will never know, and you will not be able to take the taxes on their properties. So there's got to be a balance.
One hears so many horror stories in LA about litigious relationships between architects, clients, contractors. Mm-hmm. I get from you a sense of a more harmonious approach to construction.
We really think of this as a family. We're a team. You know, we're building for a client, but we're transparent. Everything about what we build and how we build and what we're drawing and shared files and all of these things, we do that as a group. The clients, the subcontractors, the architects, the engineers, and my firm, we all work openly with one another. There's no good reason to throw each other under the bus.
You're listening to Joan Barton. She's founder and owner of Dirty Girl Construction. I'm Frances Anderton, and you're listening to DNA. Now, you can't talk to a woman in construction without wondering what it's like to be a woman in construction. After all, Joan is one of very few women contractors in Los Angeles.
I have definitely gone through a lot of being doubted because I'm a woman, which my reaction is to get up and show that I know how to do someone's job just as well as they do. You know, I've had to go grab a nail gun and frame next to the framers so that they get that I've done what they're doing. And there's comments made on job sites, not as much anymore as they used to be, but there's definitely comments that are made on job sites about me as a woman that are derogatory, sexualized. And what I do is I just take people into my office and I explain to them how they need to act when they're around me. I tell them. And if they don't, then they're just they're removed. They're removed from my world. So that's me setting boundaries and teaching people how to treat me.
In talking with Joan, we found ourselves, of course, on the current firestorm, sexual harassment. The allegations we're all reading about range from horrifying to creepy to perhaps over-exuberant flirting. So what's the solution, we pondered? To publicly shame or axe all men for all infractions? And what can women do to protect themselves? Joan Barton says her life and work experience has taught her some things about empowerment.
This is a story that I've heard my whole life, where a lot of women are feeling like it's safe now to come out and tell their story. But I think that the two things that come to mind for me are being accountable for our part in our decision-making, really thinking through what the consequences of, do you want to go meet this person in your hotel, in their hotel room at midnight after a party, what the consequences of that decision are, because if that person really wants to meet with me, we could do it tomorrow at my office at 10 o'clock, sober, awake, at a desk with a crowd around me? Or am I willing to risk what may happen in that situation? And with that, I'll back that up and take it into just a normal everyday life situation for me. I really think about my safety when I go to meet a new client, the same way a real estate agent probably does at this point. You know, men, women, couples, whatever, call me all day long and say, will you come to my house? And I really have to assess that person. I have to research them. I have to see where they live. I look them up. I do a lot of research before I go to someone's house by myself. Because the fact is, I could walk in there and they could be crazy. And that would be the end of me. So normally I take people with me when I go to meet someone, especially if it's up in the hills where nobody can find me. You know, like I go to these houses that are down a driveway that are 3 miles long and anything could happen. So people need to do that on a regular basis, and we need to teach each other how to do that, and we need to teach our children how to do that to have good decision-making. I think on the other end of it, there's the Me Too thing going on, and I think it's great that we're all creating a voice and creating a place that we possibly can create change, right? There's a possibility for education or re-education of both genders separately in how we act together. And I think that's fantastic. And I think that's where we need to go to. But there's a big difference between having something be the story of your life and a story from your life. And those are two different ways of acting and reacting in this world.
And that boils down to differences in personality, the way one's raised, how you process events in your life. Is that fair to say?
It's fair to say that I grew up in a family that prepared me for the world in ways that maybe other people were not. But it's also factual to say that I have suffered worse than most women at the hands of men. That being said, my way of dealing with them has been entirely based around kind of what we're talking about, looking at how I can do things differently and moving past it. When I lived in New York, you know, I had a very awful thing happen to me and had to make a decision even then about whether I wanted to prosecute or not prosecute the men who harmed me. And I chose to just get into forgiveness. That set me free. And I think that if we can get everyone to a place where they understand what that means, what it means to be a force, and they learn and pass on that knowledge, we will see these problems less and less. And we have to do it with men, too. I mean, we have to teach our boys. We have to teach our boys. Men are the way they are, and women are the way they are, because that is what we have been taught.
We should say, Joan, that you, as proof of your power in the universe, you know, you've run this very successful construction company, and you wound up marrying one of your employees, and nobody actually knows his last name. We just think of him as Mr. Barton. Yes.
Even at our wedding, he was introduced as Mr. and Mrs. Joan Barton, which we all laughed at, you know.
But it says something, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, I'll tell you this. Being the boss and being attracted to an employee, because now I'm in the reverse situation of kind of what we're talking about. I took a lot of great care and thought in how to approach that situation. Because I, as his boss, how do I even bring that up? You know, it's sort of like, do I fire him and then ask him on a date because this is inappropriate? Or do I act like an adult who's having feelings and just say, I need to talk to you about something personal and I don't know where to begin, which is how that conversation started. And if you're uncomfortable at any moment, just raise your hand and let me know. And go into it one human to another, you know? Now, the good news was he was feeling exactly the same way and was thinking he was going to have to quit his job in order to date me. But instead, what we decided was, let's see if we can work together and also have a personal relationship. And if they don't work out, we'll decide which one's more important. And it was really that simple. And that's what we went forward and did. And 3 years later, we were married just 3 weeks ago.
Well, Joan Barton, what a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Frances. It was really fun.
You heard from Joan Barton. She's a general contractor and owner of Dirty Girl Construction. I'm Frances Anderton. That's it for today's DNA. Avishai Artsy is the show's producer. Ray Guana mixed this episode. Special thanks to Jason Groman. And thank you very much for listening.